Hello, we're back again so soon.
Just when you thought you had gotten rid of us for another year and a half.
No such luck this time. So in our previous podcast, which was only like, what, about a week ago or 2 weeks ago?
Yes, something like that.
Yeah, we talked about our predictions for Star Wars, The Force Awakens. So we thought we would come on and discuss our predictions and also how we felt about the movie since we've both seen it twice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, because, yeah, we've both seen it in IMAX 3D as well,
yep.
Correct?
Yep.
So, and then regular 3D. Non-IMAX 3D.
But what about the regular, just non-3D? What would that be called? 2D?
I just call it regular D.
Well, if you think about it, a 2D movie is 3D because the third dimension that it's in is time.
That is true.
Yeah, I learned that from Interstellar.
Yes.
You know what I liked about Interstellar? Well, I liked a lot of things
about
it.
That it's awesome.
But instead of like putting Jessica Chastain in old age makeup, they just casted an older actress, Ellen Burstyn. Whatever her name is. The mom from
Exorcist. Lady.
Yeah.
And Requiem for a Dream Lady.
Right. They just
who wasn't
like, hey,
Jennifer Connelly.
Why don't we respect our audience's intelligence and they just know that this is the same character?
Yes.
And
people
worked.
Say Christopher Nolan's a cold director, but Interstellar was a very emotional film, which was awesome.
Yeah. I think I may have liked it better than The Force Awakens.
Oh, I definitely did.
So,
no doubt about that.
Why don't we go through our predictions from our previous podcast? I actually wrote them down on this document here.
Just as Count Dooku predicted.
So we're going to, you know, discuss how close we were with our predictions, how we felt about the movie, and then, the controversial part, we're going to talk about things that The Phantom Menace did better.
Yes!
Okay, so our Star Wars predictions that turned out to be true. I wrote them down. Number one, Finn crashes on a planet and meets Rey.
True.
That did happen, although... He crashed on the planet for kind of a different reason. I thought he was going to be like a rebel spy or something.
Hmm.
But he was just a stormtrooper who had a change of heart.
Who went rogue.
Yeah. He went Rogue One. Did I tell you my idea for a Tom Cruise movie called Rogue Geisha? Where Ethan Hunt has to go undercover in Japan 100 years ago.
Was Rob Marshall going to direct it?
Probably.
Nice.
And Alec Baldwin would be like, Ethan Hunt is undercover. How deep undercover? Very deep. And then you see, like, he's a geisha. My God, you've forgotten who you are. I will have to check your memoir.
You know, it was funny, not to get too far off track, but I watched the Rogue Nation commentary track the other day.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how good that movie is due to how it was made, because the commentary has Tom Cruise and Christopher McQuarrie, who directed and wrote it on it.
Why? Was it like a really disastrous production?
Well, it's just amazing. Like, there's so many scenes through it where they talk about it, and they're like, okay, in this scene, like, Alec Baldwin's, like, holding an iPad. We don't know what's on the iPad at this point. Like, when we shot it, we don't really know where the story's going to go from here. But we just said, you know, Alec, just kind of, you know, react this way to it. And then we're going to fill in the blanks later. And it's, I swear, like, every 10 minutes throughout the commentary track, there's comments like that where they're just like, well, we didn't know what was going to happen next. But then they filled it in. And
yeah, I guess the first Iron Man was like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was just a mess when they filmed it, and... Somehow they made it. They made it work.
Because yeah, it almost sounded like the way they described it. It's like, well, we had like these awesome action sequences, and then we essentially like built the movie around those. Like it sounds like kind of like a clinic on how not to make a movie when you listen to the commentary track.
Well,
but it turned out like awesome.
You know, so. They say that about the first Star Wars that it was a disaster.
True,
and
yeah.
It was edited into the classic it is today.
Yeah.
Well, so
yeah.
Ethan Hunt is trapped on Jakku.
That would have been a movie.
Okay, so the next thing that we guessed, actually most of our predictions were pretty close. We were wrong in a few things. Rey has a MacGuffin that drives the plot.
Yes.
That most certainly happened. I kind of thought it was going to be like Luke's lightsaber. I guess Luke's lightsaber did show up, but it was the map. which, you know, was the same as the data of the Death Star.
Yes.
Oh, and we both thought it was going to be really safe. We didn't expect a remake of Episode 4.
Yeah.
But that's what it was. A little too safe.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll get into our thoughts. We just have to get to our list here. Our list, you know, telling people how awesome we are predicting things.
This is our, we were right about the Wii thing, you know, except with Star Wars, so.
Han Solo doesn't have the Millennium Falcon at the beginning of the film. True.
True story.
Yep. But then I thought that they were going to have to help him get it out of impound or something, but that's not what it was.
Yeah.
So that was a little different. But then Han Solo helps the main characters go someplace. Yes. They meet up with the Resistance. Yes. Han and Leia are not together.
Yep.
That also happened. And then you called this one.
Yep, that Kylo Ren would be Han and Leia's kid. So,
because everyone has to be related to everybody.
Yes. Which means that Rey will, she's either Luke's kid or she's Han and Leia's.
I'm kind of thinking she's going to be Han and Leia's kid. I'd prefer that she's nobody's kid.
Yeah, I mean, since she has to be related to somebody because it's Star Wars, I want it to be Han and Leia's kid, because then you would at least have something a little bit new where it's like, okay, you've got like evil brother, good sister, and...
Brother and sister who don't know that they're brother and sister, that's new.
No, no, I'm just saying, like, the like in terms of Star Wars and the conflict between them, you know, like, essentially she has to either take him down or redeem him.
Well, I was thinking, you know, maybe Kylo Ren turned evil, and that's why
they put her into hiding. Yep.
But then they show her as, like, a 5-year-old girl being left there. Yeah, so is she that much younger than Kylo Ren?
Well, and also, if she was 5 years old, she would probably have some memory of her parents, too.
Probably, yeah.
You know? So
I don't know. I would prefer that she's... I mean, why can't she just be a random abandoned orphan on a shitty planet?
That would be better, but, you know.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
That almost seemed, you know, same thing you said, like, with Alec Baldwin reacting to an iPad in Force Awakens, where she's like, yep, I'm classified too, big secret where I'm from. And it's almost like you can tell when they wrote that they didn't know where she was from.
Yeah.
They just had her say that her backstory is a secret so they could put in whatever they wanted later.
Yeah, they're like, you know, we'll let Rian Johnson figure that out. That's kind of how it felt. Yeah. You know, you get to this point in the movie and it's like, okay, you get to figure everything out now. You just don't have Han Solo available to you.
But I don't think it's a coincidence that she looks like kind of a Keira Knightley, tall Natalie Portman.
God, she sounds so much like Keira Knightley, too. Like, if you took her voice, you'd swear it was like Keira Knightley in the movie.
And the reason we bring up Keira Knightley is because she was one of the Padme decoys in The Phantom Menace.
Yep.
So she was actually in that movie. And a lot of people say that she resembles Natalie Portman. I don't really think she does now.
Yeah, the way they did the makeup and stuff back then, like, it worked reasonably well.
Oh, you mean
well.
Like a geisha?
Yeah.
There it is again, a geisha.
Tom Nation.
Yeah, so I don't know. I would prefer that it's, you know, that's not the way it is, but it will be.
Yeah, it's just how Star Wars is. It's very, what do you want to call it, incestual or something? I don't know.
So, as you know, you all know, I absolutely despise Star Trek Into Darkness. And so I was concerned about this film, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really fun. I mean, I the whole time I was like, well, wow, this is a remake of Episode 4, but it was a well-done remake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's the thing. I mean, it's okay to tell the same story as long as you do it well. I mean, it'd be better to tell a new story, but again, they're being conservative.
Yeah.
But when I saw it a second time, I had a different feeling about it. And the feeling I had while watching it the second time was this. I was like, oh, you know, I thought there was, you know, this movie wasn't perfect when I saw it the first time. And, you know, so, you know, of course I'm going to say X, Y, and Z are problems. It's mostly that it's a remake. But then when I was watching it the second time, the first half of the movie, I was like, wow, this is so exciting. You know, I forgot, you know, it had been like 3 days or whatever. Like, I forgot how exciting this was. I can't believe I had an issue with this.
Yeah.
And pretty much everything up until they leave Jakku is really good.
Mm-hmm.
But especially on a second viewing, the second half of the film really dragged for me. It, like, moves lightning fast, and then it slows to a crawl.
Yeah, I saw it again last night. That was my second time, and I pretty much echo the sentiments. It's like, because, yeah, I was watching it, and, like, I love the stuff where they're just, like, setting up Rey's character. You know, like, she's scavenging from that ship.
Yep, it's done really efficiently.
Yeah, it's done efficiently, but it's not rushed. Like, it's done just right. Like, you know, it kind of takes its time just enough with it to, like,
yeah, you see one day in her life. She scavenges. Yep. She sells the parts. I liked how the character said it's one half or one quarter portion.
Yeah.
Because if you just said 94 space bucks, we have no concept of how much that is.
Yeah.
But if you say it's a quarter of one unit, then it sounds like a shitty amount.
Yes.
So I thought that was a smart screenwriting choice.
Yeah.
And then she goes home. I think the best special effect in the movie was when she put that shit in the dish and it turns into a bomb.
That was cool.
It looked real. Maybe it was real. Who knows?
I like, too, there's like a little beat when she first brings the junk back and she's, like, cleaning it in that spot.
Oh, yeah.
And there's that old lady across from her, and you can see that she kind of, like, stops and she looks at that lady, and it's kind of like she's seeing what her future will be. And you know, I just like little character moments like that, because you could see that she was just kind of like, I'm going to do this forever, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like all that stuff's pretty good, like, you know, and then Finn crashes on the planet.
Yeah.
That stuff was
the stuff
with
them escaping the Star Destroyer was good.
Yeah, it was good. And
I did notice another similarity, not to Episode 4, but to Phantom Menace. So like Finn lands on the planet, he's like drinking the water next to the monster.
Yeah.
And then he sees someone in a fight. In a market in a sandy planet. It's just like in Phantom Menace when Jar Jar eats that thing and he has to fight Sebulba. And then Anakin, like, you know, interrupts.
Yeah.
Pretty much the same thing happens, except for, like, I do like how she beat up the guys before Finn even got there. That was nice.
Yeah.
But it was basically the same thing where, like, just because of some random, noticing a random fight gets the characters connected. Otherwise, you think about it, like, if Jar Jar, who obviously is the main catalyst for everything in Star Wars.
Yes.
If he hadn't tried to eat that chicken thing and drop it on Sebulba, I mean, would Anakin have even talked to them?
That's true.
Yeah, they would have been stuck on Naboo. They'd still be on Naboo.
It all comes back to Jar Jar. But see, in that whole area, there's one of my problems with the movie, too, is, like, when Finn crashes on the planet, like he had helped Poe escape from the ship.
Oh, yeah, and Poe disappears after the ship gets mummied.
Yeah, Poe just disappears, but he had his jacket on when he was in the ship, but then for some reason his jacket's left behind in the ship, and the only reason it's left there is so that Finn can pick it up and put it on so that BB-8 will recognize the jacket when they're in the little village.
Yeah, that's true. Like, why would he eject and leave his jacket?
Yeah.
I mean, because he would eject in the chair.
Yeah, so that was
I didn't
like
even
bullshit.
Catch that. Wow, that's really dumb.
Yeah, because I'm just sitting there, like, when I watched it again, and I'm like, okay, the only reason that is there is so that BB-8 will recognize him.
But it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Chris mentioned that. I mean, he said the same thing a lot of people had. It's like, I enjoyed it, but all these problems.
Yeah.
He says what tends to happen in a lot of those Abrams movies is as soon as logic gets in the way of the story, it's gone.
Yeah.
It's like jettisoned.
That's a good point, yes. And, yeah, because that's the thing. I mean, like, the things the film does really well is it captures, like, the tone and, like, the feel of the original trilogy pretty well. You know, it feels like that sort of movie. And it does have, like, good character stuff. Like, I liked Rey a lot. Like, she's basically Luke, except she's not, like, whiny. She's, like, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah.
She's kind of, like, sucked into events. Like, she's not yearning for adventure. Like, she wants to stay on the planet, but she gets drawn away and pulled into this.
Yeah, that was one thing that I thought the movie did better than the original Star Wars was this, because she's the same character as Luke, but she's more interesting. Like, Luke was never the most interesting character in Star Wars.
Yeah,
I don't know if
Rey
is either, but she's a much better character than Luke ever was.
Yeah, and she just has a lot of good moments through the movie. And there's just something about, like, when they leave Jakku and they run into Han Solo. Like, that feels really contrived.
Han Solo was good in it, but yes, that's where the movie starts to fall apart. Well, I won't say fall apart, but severely diminishes in quality.
Yeah, because it's like, because, like, they get on that ship, and then basically they just have that scene with, like, these
Oh, the monster
they're like
things?
Gangs. There's like the two gangs that show up, and it's kind of just to have a jokey scene with Han where,
yeah,
you know, it could be like, oh, yeah, I ripped you guys off twice. You know, what was the second time? You know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then you have these like stupid monsters on the ship.
But yeah, like, I didn't like those really monsters. That really felt like all the bad parts or the worst parts of the Abrams Star Trek movies.
Yeah, it's like you just
really
didn't need it. And then right after that scene is the first scene with Snoke, which just horrible, like, CG wannabe emperor.
And you know he's going to be, like, 4 feet tall. He's going to be, like, a...
But it's, like, the name's
stupid. The fact that they projected him really giant is obviously a subversion.
Yeah, but it's, like, his name's dumb. The CG sucks ass on him. It's, like, he's just stupid.
Yeah, when Leia's, like, it was Snoke who betrayed our son.
Yeah.
It's, like, it just sounds... Well, not only does he sound like a frog. By the way, kids, don't do drugs.
Yeah.
But it's like Snoke. I mean, it's almost as bad as Count Dooku.
Yeah, I take Dooku all day over Snoke.
You know, like... I know we're not quite to that point yet, but... Well, there's... I could actually think of probably at least three or four things in Phantom Menace I thought were done better in this movie. Maybe we're not quite to that yet. That was kind of dumb.
And it's just...
I think the problem was, you know, when they're on Jakku, it's like, we have to get off this planet with this droid. There's a very clear goal. Once they got off the planet, it was like, okay, now what do we do? Now, in the original movie, the Death Star was set up as a threat the entire time.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, you know.
Because that's what the plans are for and all
right.
That,
yeah. Like Leia, she says, you know, Obi-Wan, you know, this robot has the plans to stop the Death Star.
Yep.
It's like, and you know what the entire movie needs to be.
Yeah, and you're my only hope. You know, it's like, you know, it's like. He needs to be sprung into action. Basically.
And that scene where they go to the bar with Maz Kanata, that went on way too long.
Well, and that just felt like, oh, people really liked that cantina scene in A New Hope, so we should have a bar scene with a bunch of creatures in it.
But it wasn't as good.
No, it wasn't. But that's just what it felt like. It was like they were like hitting all these beats that they felt like they had.
See, that's
to
the problem I have with this kind of filmmaking is like it. JJ doesn't actually know what made the original movie work. Nobody does.
No.
But he says, okay, I'll show these things that are similar to the original, and people will like them because they're like that.
Yeah.
I mean...
And they do, you know.
Yeah, but it's not, nothing new has been created. It's like we talked about like with Battlefield, like DICE is like, we don't know why Bad Company 2 was so popular and successful.
Yeah.
It's like a culture for getting its own language or its own history, and...
Yeah, you just catch lightning in a bottle sometimes, and you can't explain it.
But I don't think that means there can't be another Star Wars. I mean, because no matter how much money this movie makes, which will be a ton, I'm sure it'll outgross Jurassic World, and it should because it's much better.
I bet it'll beat Avatar the way it's going.
Really?
It's broken like every record so far. Basically, it's already at like $325 million, and it hasn't even been out a week. And then the Christmas weekend.
Yeah.
Like, they're saying it could be, like, it'll probably be past $600 million before New Year's, they're saying.
That's insane.
Yeah. I mean, it's just on fire. Like, it set the Tuesday record. It made, like, $37 million. It made $40 on Monday.
Well, I guess it proves that, you know, people will go to movies, but it has to be something that they want to see.
Yeah. Oh, and I will say, I think the best scene in the whole movie is the Millennium Falcon when Ray's piloting it
on the planet,
like, that's really awesome. Even though if you think about it, you're like, could she really fly it that well, that quickly or whatever? Because it's like, she flies it in
ways...
Well,
she learns the Force in, like, one day.
Yeah, because it's like, Han Solo would have been jealous of how she piloted that damn thing. But still, it was, like, cool as hell.
There was something about that scene that I really liked. Well, I mean, you're right, it's a really good scene.
It had a really good energy to
it. Yeah, and I love the period at the end. Like, halfway through the scene, BB-8 flies up in the air, and he, like, sticks those spiderweb things out.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, that's funny. And then when the scene is over, he releases them and clunks on the floor.
Yeah.
It's a literal round period at the end of an awesome action sequence. But the one thing I liked about it, so when I saw it in the trailers, you see the Millennium Falcon flying into, like, this enormous junk ship. And you're like, that seems really dangerous, right?
Yeah.
But then you don't realize that it's Ray piloting it. You don't know that until you see the movie. Now, Ray has been in and out of all of those ships.
Yeah.
She would know, yes, I think there's enough room to do this. Han Solo wouldn't, but she would.
Yes.
So that was actually explained.
Yes.
Well, it wasn't explained, but it was set up.
It was set up, which a lot of other things in the movie weren't.
Right, right. Because, I mean, if Han Solo would have done that, it would have been like, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
But she would know. And well, even earlier in the movie, you see her like inside the ship, and it's there's like vast open expanses.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that scene was really good. Then the movie just kind of goes downhill. I mean, if the whole movie would have been as good as the first half, I think...
Yeah.
Well, it's if you look at how successful it is and how much people love it like we predicted they would,
yeah.
Imagine if it was better. And it could be a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
It could have been a lot better.
Yeah, there's just, like, stuff, too, where it's kind of, like, missed opportunity. Like, at the very first scene in the movie is, like, where they're at night at that little, like, camp or whatever, and Poe takes the shot at Kylo Ren, and he freezes it with a force in midair.
Mm-hmm.
And I love, too, how, like, the whole rest of that scene goes on, and you kind of forget about it, and then when Kylo Ren walks away, he finally releases it, and it, like, hits that thing.
Yeah.
But I'm like... How badass would it have been? I mean, granted, he couldn't kill Poe because it's like the first scene in the movie, but how badass would it have been if he would have taken the laser bolt and then just like shot somebody with it?
Well, it's he could have shot Max von Sydow with it.
Yeah. I mean, that would have been cool, you know? I mean, it was awesome that he froze
it. It was still pretty cool.
It was, but I was just like, again, it's like, how could it have been cooler?
But he's got enough force power to stop a laser bolt in midair and hold it for like a minute, but he can't beat up...
Yes.
Not only just Rey, but Finn fights him?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he got... Maybe that's why... As something else, I think I already told you this, that bugged me in the movie. I guess we can go on to things that really bugged us about the movie.
Yeah.
It really bothered me when Han Solo was all excited to use Chewie's crossbow.
Yes.
It's like, they've been friends for, like, what, 40 years, probably?
Yeah, at least.
And he'd never used his weapon?
Yeah, that was like we talked about when we were playing Battlefront the other night, and it was like, okay, you know, like, you and Mike, like, you know, going out and, you know, shooting guns or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, we grew up in the country and like,
yeah.
If you're out like, you know, doing clay or something and like someone has a gun, you're like, hey, can I try that?
Yes.
That happens immediately, not after 40 years.
Yep.
I don't know. That just really bothered me. But I think, I think the reason they did that, well, there's two reasons. One, because he never really did anything with that gun before.
Yeah.
So they wanted to showcase like, ooh, look, Chewie's crossbow is really powerful. And two, when he shoots Kylo Ren in the gut with it, it's like, wow, it has really damaged this guy. Maybe that's why Finn and Rey can put up a fight.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Because you see him, like, bleeding, you know, during the scene.
Yeah, and he keeps doing the, like, where he's bashing himself.
Yeah.
Which...
It still is a little...
It's a little tough to swallow.
It's like when they fight, when he, like, he force pushes Rey against a tree and knocks her out.
Yeah.
Why didn't he do that to Finn?
To Finn, yeah. Like, Kylo Ren, too, like, I liked him quite a bit. Up until he takes his mask off. Like,
he turns into a different character.
Yeah, he's just like completely different after that.
Maybe that was the point?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe you were supposed to try it. Maybe that was the attempt to get you to like empathize with him more or something. To show that he's human. But I don't know. No.
So, I mean, there are a lot of good things that they did. Like Kylo Ren, they show that he is evil and they give you a reason to hate him.
Yeah.
More than, oh, look, this guy has red face paint and horns. He must be bad.
That is true, because of course he, you know, kills Han. So,
yep. You could see that coming like a mile away.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I'm glad that Han died, because it showed that, you know, a character can die. It's not like Walking Dead.
It's not like Marvel movies.
Yeah. I mean, it's good that there's some finality to it. Yeah. I just don't know if it was really earned.
My biggest problem with it, too, is it's like that scene, like, to me, it was really good. Then he dies. Chewie has a very brief little rampage where he kills,
Chewie should
like
have ripped
people.
Someone's arms off.
Yeah, he should have ripped arms off. He should have had, like, a five-minute, like, death march through that place, just, like, killing everybody. You can't tell me that everybody in the theater wouldn't have just, like, loved that. But the big problem I have is, like, you know, then they, of course,
like
have
if Chewie went to confront Kylo Ren and the stormtrooper jumps in front of him,
yeah.
And he just grabs his arms and rips them the fuck off.
Yeah, and throws them into the pit that, like...
My God, the audience would have just exploded
so awesome,
in,
yeah.
like, cheers.
But then they have their little trench run, you know, where they, of course, you know, again, repeat A New Hope, blow up the new version of a Death Star. But then the thing is, like...
How did Kylo Ren get off the Death Star?
Yeah, him and Captain Phasma, I'm sure, which was a totally wasted character. Like, they made a big deal out of her, and she doesn't do shit.
I thought she was going to be, like, some sort of badass. She has, like, what, two scenes?
Yeah, and one of them she's, like, shutting down a shield or whatever.
But she should, you know when, like, Finn fights the stormtrooper with the shock baton or whatever?
Yeah.
On the planet?
That should have been her.
That should have been her, yeah.
That was one of the things, too, like, that thing where they say Finn's from sanitation and all that. So basically that's there to set up the joke where they say, oh, do we have, like, a garbage compactor that we can throw Phasma down? And then he's like, yes, there is. But then the thing is, it's like, why the fuck would a sanitation stormtrooper be sent down on a planet to, like, go, like, kill people in the very first scene in the movie?
Maybe he worked his way up to killing people?
Maybe. I don't know.
If you watch the movie, there's no way someone in a trash compactor or Kylo Ren would have got off that planet.
Yeah.
You just know that they did because they'll be in the sequels.
Yes. Yeah, because, like, they didn't die on screen. So
they'll probably turn Phasma, like, into a Boba Fett kind of character. And that's the thing. I'm okay with this movie being... it's actually very similar to how I felt about Star Trek 2009. It's like, I'm okay with the flaws of this movie because it works really well. I just hope they do something new in the next one.
Yes.
And with Star Trek, they didn't. They went backwards big time. And I was like, oh. And I think there could be a similar backlash to Star Wars. I mean, Rogue One obviously is guaranteed to be a different story. But Episode 8, I mean, if it's just going to be a remake of Empire, ugh.
Yeah, because I was pretty impressed. Like, after I saw it, you know, I went home and I was, like, looking online because I had been on, like, social media blackout and everything. And so I started, like, you know, looking at people's comments about the movie, and I was surprised. Like, people were like, you know, I enjoyed it, but they were like, it hewed a little too close to the original trilogy for
Few people who say they hate it, but there's definitely a big split, like, oh my god, this is the best thing ever, or I enjoyed it, but it was way too close to Episode 4.
Yeah. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, like, when I watched it last night, I tried to just be like, you know what, just enjoy the fact that there's a new Star Wars movie and
that
just kind of, like, bask in it. And, you know, it is fun, but yeah, it's definitely got its issues. And the thing I think, too, is there's things in this movie that piss me off that maybe will be explained in later movies.
What about the Chewie Leia thing?
That's the thing I'm thinking about is one of them. Because, like, when I watched the movie, it pissed me off so much when it's after Han's dead and they get back, Leia's standing there, Chewie walks right past her like she's not even there. And I was like, this is bullshit. Han's dead. They should be, like, hugging, consoling each other, because the first time you see Leia in the movie, what happens? Chewie walks up and hugs her. And it's like, they're the two people that had the most connection to Han in the series.
But instead she hugs Rey?
Yeah, which, as far as we know, she's never met her before.
Right.
You know, and so that's where it's like,
that's right. She'd never met her before, because by the time she lands on the planet, Rey has already been kidnapped.
Yep, yeah. So yeah, they'd never met before that moment. So that's...
I mean, maybe if Rey is her daughter, and she knows who she is because Leia has the Force.
Yep. And
but
that's...
as the movie stands, it makes no goddamn sense. Yeah. Really, Rey's attachment to Han Solo would be, like, slightly more than your Uber driver.
But yeah, so that's one of the things where I look at it and I'm like, it pissed me off, but I'm like, okay, maybe in Episode 8 they'll explain that. Like, if, yeah, she ends up being Leia's daughter or, like, her niece or something, then... But still, it doesn't explain Chewie and her not having a moment still.
No.
But...
Yeah, Chewie hugs her when they first meet, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So, okay, you know my theory. You know how everyone says Chewie didn't get a medal in Star Wars?
Yes.
And I think the reason for that is because Chewie is just so much taller than Carrie Fisher, it would look stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, he would have had to kneel down, and she would have had to reach up to put a medal on him.
Yeah.
I really think that's why it didn't happen.
Yeah, it could be.
But then I was like, okay, why didn't it happen here? Is because they would look silly hugging. But as you said, they...
Yeah, he
walked... Or he could have got down on one knee and hugged her, you know?
Yeah.
Like...
Because, yeah, when I was watching it last night, I was like, okay, I want to... Because here's Leia, so I'm like, okay, what's this Chewie going to do with her? And I'm like, okay, he walks right up and hugs her while Han stands there. And then, you know, he walks off, and then Han and Leia have their little moment there or whatever. But yeah, when he gets back, it's just he walks by, and then you see just a brief shot of Chewie just kind of, like, sitting in a corner somewhere.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to BB-8 running into R2-D2 and waking up, which is another thing that's annoying, because it's like, why the fuck did R2 wait until that moment to wake up when BB-8 was there earlier in the movie and they had both map pieces?
Oh, yeah.
Unless it's because the lightsaber showed up now, but then it's like, is R2 Force-sensitive or something?
Wasn't
now?
The lightsaber there the first time?
It...
Yeah, because would it have Finn been? Has it. Remember?
Yeah, Ray that's right. Yeah, Finn has it. So
Maz Kanata
yeah.
gives it to Finn. So they had the lightsaber and the map and R2-D2. R2-D2 was just asleep, in sleep mode.
So it only happened because it was
the end
convenient
of the movie.
For the plot, and yeah.
Wow, you've noticed more things wrong with this movie than I even did.
Yeah, that shit just annoyed me. Like, I remembered that from when I saw it the first time, too, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch for this shit this time, just to make sure. Oh, and another thing that pissed me off.
Oh, boy.
While we're on course, was Poe Dameron. Like, I liked his character a lot.
Oh, but why does Finn have such an attachment to him when they see each other at the end?
Well, there's that, but there's also, remember when they escape from the ship and all that, and they're in the TIE fighter?
Yeah.
And Poe is insistent that they go back to Jakku, and Finn's like, no, we ain't going back to Jakku, and he's like, no, I have to go back to get the droid before the First Order gets it.
Yeah, and he like says it's an orange BB-8 unit. Like, he gives Finn enough information so Finn can identify
so he
the
will
droid.
Recognize it. Yep. But then what happens? They crash on the planet. We don't see Poe again until the X-Wings show up on Cantina Planet, and it's like, why would Poe have left? How does he know that BB-8's been picked up? Like, if his whole thrust...
Oh, he should have stayed on Jakku to find the robot?
Yeah.
Poe and Finn would have both landed on the planet, or, you know, both been in the wreck and got out of it.
Yeah.
Then Finn would never have had a chance to become a character.
Yes.
Because obviously Poe would have been the driver of all,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
all the things that happened. Maybe he should have been.
Yeah, because, yeah, like, out of the three new people, like... Finn was, like, the least interesting character to me. He's essentially a plot device. I don't know. Where I liked Rey a lot, and the little bit we saw of Poe, like, in the very first scene, you know, he had that funny bit when, like, Kylo Ren confronts him.
Yeah.
And then Kylo Ren, like, says nothing. And so he's like, okay, what's the deal here? Do you talk?
Finn
Do I
was
talk?
A little bit too much of an audience character.
Yes.
Which, I mean, God, who doesn't know Star Wars? I mean, who are you setting Star Wars up for?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see your point. I wish there would have been... I don't see why they both could... I like how he, you know, I'm a stormtrooper. I don't want to do this anymore. I'll help you escape.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, yeah, Poe disappearing, and they know he's not dead.
Yeah, yeah.
But then if you think about it, yeah, then Finn sees Poe, and they're like, they act like they've been friends forever. It's like, they knew each other for about 10 minutes.
Yep.
And it's actually just like the aborted, or not aborted, the missing scene in episode 4, where Luke and, who is it, Biggs?
Biggs, yeah.
You know, where they meet up?
Yeah.
So there was a scene in the original Star Wars where Biggs is like, I'm going to leave Tatooine. And then Luke and Biggs meet each other at the end before they get in the TIE fighters. It's like, and it's very much the same. Like, oh my God, I miss you so much, buddy.
They actually stuck that scene back in the special edition.
Oh,
it's actually
okay.
in there.
But that was another a similar aspect.
But, yeah,
but it didn't really feel earned with these characters. I guess
no.
Biggs didn't either.
But yeah, like for me, the... not to be completely negative, like my pleasant surprises about this movie were like BB-8 turned out to be really awesome.
Oh yeah,
like I was really concerned about him, but he totally makes you like forget about R2-D2 basically. Like,
oh yeah,
really
BB-8
great.
Was probably the best character.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's more of a fully character. Realized character than like Finn by far, and Poe, I'd say.
Yeah, I love that part. Well, I don't like the scene in the bar where she goes downstairs and looks at the lightsaber. It's just too slow.
Well,
but I love in the background, you see BB-8 for each step. He looks down, rolls onto the step, looks down, rolls onto the step. Like, he has it all figured out. Like, he doesn't just go clunk, clunk, clunk.
Yeah.
He's very careful about how he rolls down steps.
Yeah, that scene, too, it was kind of like, this is awfully convenient, because it's like, okay, they go to this cantina, and then this cantina matron or whatever she is just has Luke's lightsaber and has it in
his original lightsaber.
Yeah, and has it in a public area where so she must have got
well,
the one that
no
fell.
Well, there's no locks on the Death Star oscillator, so why put locks on a storage room in a bar?
I suppose, yeah. So
it goes back to our Death Star insurance.
Yeah.
Like, all right, if you want to build a fourth Death Star, we're going to require locks and doors on critical infrastructure.
It's like, those premiums are too high. We'll go without it. But yeah, BB-8 was great. Harrison Ford was surprisingly fun.
He brought a lot of gravity to the movie.
Yeah, he was Yeah, he was definitely like the, well, literally the father figure
my
character.
My favorite part of the movie, though, was when C-3PO said, "You may not have recognized me because of my red arm." I found that so hilarious, but it's actually a really well-written line.
Yeah.
Because it shows that C-3PO has a greater sense of self-importance than he actually has. Mm-hmm. And he's like, "Oh, well, why doesn't Han Solo recognize me? Oh, it must be because of this."
And it was a classic, like, C-3PO cock-blocking Leia and Han moment, too, because, like, when he first gets introduced, he just, like, goes boop, like, right in between them. And he's like, "Han Solo."
Yeah, I did like that.
And, yeah, it had, like, just enough 3PO, because he's a freaking annoying character. But it's like, if you just get that little dose like they did in this movie, it's fine. And
oh, I have a question for you. I mean, Star Wars, like, it's been, like, what, 10,000 years since they invented hyperspace, right?
Apparently, yeah.
It's something like that, though. It's been a long, long time since they've had
it. Yeah, which is why technology doesn't really change.
Yeah,
apparently.
I was going to say, like, nowadays you wouldn't have a 60-year-old anything.
Yeah.
Let alone a robot. So that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of the thing. That's why, you know, like, that's their easy way to explain why, you know, technology doesn't change much from, like, the prequels all the way up you know, to this movie, is that essentially they've reached, like, the limit of physics and all this stuff. So
I mean in our society you have a laptop for like 4 years and it's useless.
Yeah.
And so a robot that's what R2 would be at least 60 years old, right?
Yeah, because him and 3PO both, because they've been around since the very beginning.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're both older than Leia.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, I was really glad, again going back to Into Darkness, it's like, oh, I know, let's have Spock say Khan instead of Kirk saying Khan. So I really, really thought, I mean, you could tell like 10 minutes into it or 10 minutes into the end, you know, Han Solo is going to die. I'm like, oh God, is he going to radio back and say, "Leia, I love you." And she'll say, "I know."
Ugh.
I really expected that to happen. And I'm really glad that it didn't.
Yeah. One thing I liked in that scene too, like with, you know, the Kylo Ren Han scene or whatever, is like, Han, like, you could tell he kind of knows what's going to happen if he walks out there, but he knows he has to do it. You know, like, he's like, I have to do this. But I love when he walks out there and he's trying to, like, kind of muster it up to say it. But then he, like, yells his real name, like, he yells Ben, and he says it like a father yelling at his son. Like, he nailed, like, that line really well.
Yeah. It was good to see Han Solo, I mean, Harrison Ford, give a crap.
Yeah, yeah, it was nice. And I like that, too, in that scene, because, like, when, you know, Kylo Ren's sitting there and he's, like, talking about how he's trying to, like, fight away this...
the light side.
This pull, but, yeah, like, you kind of think, like, oh, he's talking about the dark side, but it's actually the light side. Like, he hates that the light side has this tug on him because he wants to be Vader and all that, and... which is, that's a nice little tweak on it at least, but it just
really
kind of,
like,
sucks that he's just kind of like this emo kid that, like, you know, just emulates
Well, I think
Vader.
That part was actually done better than the prequels.
Yes, I would agree with that.
I mean, that's what they should have done with Anakin. Like, he, I don't know if it was the acting that held it back, but like when he's having temper tantrums and slicing up everything with his lightsaber, I mean, that made sense. And then they had a really good joke moment. The one scene I really liked, even though it went on a little too long, was when he was like trying to pull the information out of Rey's brain.
Yeah.
And then she started reading his mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was efficient, because you're like, okay, we find out what his motivations are and what his actual, you know, character is. And then we also, oh, wait, she's sensitive with the Force.
Yeah.
I mean, she still learns the Force way too fast.
Yeah, like she mind tricks the Daniel Craig stormtrooper.
That part I had, I know everyone's like, oh, that's funny. It's like, I did not like that part.
Yeah.
She knew how to use a Jedi mind trick because the audience knew about it, not because she did.
Yeah, it's like the only way you could ever explain that is if it's like she had read, you know, if she knew the mythology of Jedi and had heard about it somewhere. But it's like there's nothing in the movie to make you think that she knows what a Jedi mind trick is.
Yeah, I mean, she clearly has heard about the Jedi. Maybe she'd be like, I heard, you know, it's like Luke was real. And it's like, I heard that he could, you know, trick people by controlling their minds. Like, just set up that she'd at least heard of it.
Yeah, that was the big thing, like, when I talk to people about this movie, and I'm like, you know, when I talk about how it just doesn't set things up very well in a lot of cases.
Most movies nowadays don't.
Yeah, and it's...
Well, it sets up some things.
It does do some, but, like, what I said to him, too, is it's like, I'm not asking for, like, some big sequence. It's like, it can literally be, like, what you just said. It could just be, like, a single sentence. That's all you need sometimes, and... Because that's like, too, when the First Order... Well, that's one thing with the plot in this movie. Like, when the movie starts, the whole thing's about finding Luke Skywalker. Like, they're trying to hunt down Luke Skywalker.
For some reason.
And then somewhere along the way, this First Order shit happens, I still really don't know what the hell their objective is. Like, they blow up a bunch of, like, Republic planets.
Which ones?
Yeah, and we don't even know which ones they are. There's,
Coruscant?
Like, no setup. I don't think it was Coruscant, because I read stuff online by people that are even geekier about Star Wars than me. And they said, like, because in the movie they say it's, like, the Hosnian system or something. And apparently Coruscant is not in that system.
Well, I mean, they blow up planets within sight of the Rebel base, again, just like Star Trek 2009.
Yes, yeah. So,
it's like, if they blew up Mars, we would barely even be able to see that it happened.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, it's like that scene where they blow that shit up. It's like, I felt nothing, because it's like, I don't know what these planets are. I don't know who these random people they showed us on this planet are. It's like, it means nothing.
I mean, really, they should have blown up Coruscant if they wanted it to have an effect. But I think they were so gun-shy about not having anything from the original trilogy that they would not show it. But, like, they should. It should have been, I mean...
Yeah. Acknowledge it, you know?
And then, like, okay, here's a question. So the First Order... All right, so they beat the Empire, but what was left became the First Order?
Yeah, it seems like it's kind of like, you know, it's almost like when you see things nowadays, you know, they cut the head off of this organization, then there's like this other splinter organization that crops up, you know.
Oh, so they're like ISIS?
Kind of, you know, or whatever. You know, it's like, you know, you start like beating on Al-Qaeda, and then that then you end up having like these splinter fragments that go off.
Okay, so they obviously have less resources than the Empire ever did, because the Empire actually controlled, you know, they were a government body.
Yeah, yeah.
Then how do they build this Death Star planet? Where do they get the money for that?
Maybe Snoke's really rich. He's like their benefactor.
Yeah, he's like the Donald Trump of space. I mean, I'd really like to know more of that stuff. Like the prequels, I guess we could segue into what we feel the prequels, or at least Phantom Menace did better, but
yeah,
Phantom Menace set up the political stuff way too much.
Yes.
There was way too much information, but that's better than none.
Yeah. It did, like, world building really well.
Why is there a Republic and a Resistance? I thought the Resistance... The Republic turns into the Empire.
Yeah.
And the Resistance are people that don't like that.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't the Republic have its own army? I mean, I know that started the Empire in the first place.
Yeah, that wasn't real clear.
I mean, like, are they the Canada of space?
Because, yeah, I saw some speculation about that, too, where it's, like, the Republic's, like, way in, like, the inner parts of the galaxy or something, and, like, the Resistance is kind of operating out where the Republic doesn't have a lot of influence, and they kind of rely on this rebellion or alliance or whatever to, like, kind of help them.
Again, it's more like, oh, we gotta have the Rebels and the Resistance, because people remember those things.
Yeah.
Not that it necessarily makes sense.
Yeah, they're probably afraid if it's like, oh, we just have the Republic, then, oh, that's too much like the prequels or something, you know? And it's like, I think it's wrong to not acknowledge the prequels. Like,
still canon.
Yeah, I mean, there are like a couple little things in there that, you know, go back to them, but it's just one of those things where it's like, why be afraid of it? It's like, there's a lot of good stuff in those movies, whether people want to admit it or not.
Well, I guess this is the part where we should talk about... Because I also rewatched Phantom Menace since seeing
The
Force Awakens, so we could, of course, be controversial and say there's some things that were done better in the 1999 classic, The Phantom Menace.
Isn't that crazy to think that was 16 years ago when that came out? It's just kind
of
crazy.
Time is like an ocean of tears in which we all drown. I've seen things you humans can't imagine. We have to have Time to Die in whatever movie we make next.
Yes.
It can't be in the horror movie, but...
Look at me in whatever Possum movie we make.
Possum 10.
It would fit.
Time to Die! Okay,
yeah, so Phantom Menace.
All right, so I... okay, so trade taxation routes, that's bullshit.
Yeah, it's...
But it was set up better. Even though there's a lot of things in Phantom Menace that don't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if the Emperor wanted her, or Palpatine wanted her to sign a treaty, but then he used the conflict to become Supreme Chancellor, it's like, aren't his goals conflicting each other?
Yeah, they're kind of all over the map.
I mean, it's like, by fighting back, she makes it easier for him to become the Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I really like about the story in general, about the prequels, it's about how, you know, you can kill democracy
mm-hmm.
through crises. And I thought that was a good story.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there was a little too much political crap in it. like the Senate meeting. But you know exactly, okay, yeah, this is a sovereign system, and there's a queen. It's been taken over by the Trade Federation. Yep. So it puts all the pieces on the chessboard, at least.
Yeah, those elements are, like, very clear. It's like, yeah, some of the other crap muddles it a little, but it's like, you always know where you are. You know, like, it's like, this is Naboo. It's set up. You know, here's the people. You know, we've got the Gungans. We've got, you know, the Naboo, which is, like, Padme's people, I guess. And then here's Coruscant. It's the center of government in the galaxy. It's where the Jedi are. You know, like, all these things. It's all, like, set up really well. And the thing is, it's, like, essentially doing world building for what's to come.
Yeah.
You know, in the later, like, Attack of the Clones and Sith.
Because it's really the story of where the Empire came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how, you know, it came from good intentions, but look what it became.
Yeah. And to me, like, the biggest mistake with the prequels is that they chose to start them with Anakin at the age he was. Like, I don't get why you wouldn't start with him being, like, maybe a 15- or 16-year-old kid.
Well, don't a lot of the Phantom edits of the first three movies almost completely excise Phantom Menace?
Well, there's one called the Phantom Edit, and it's cut down to, like, an hour and 40-some minutes, and it shows how editing, you know, like we were talking about earlier with, you know, like A New Hope and things, like how it can really change a movie, and, you know, it just, the pacing's better. They take out a lot of the crap. Like the thing, too, you know, is like...
Okay, what do you think the worst part of The Phantom Menace is? And I know you're not going to say Jar Jar, and he isn't the worst part of it,
yeah,
either.
Yeah, it's got the worst part.
Maybe the pod race?
Yeah, the pod race would be up there, because it's essentially just like a tech demo at the end of the day. Like, I know when I first saw it, I'm like, wow, this is cool. Like, when you're in the theater
the first
time.
This is pod racing.
Yeah. But it's like, that's pretty cool. Actually, I would say probably the worst part of the movie is the bullshit with Anakin in the fighter ship at the end blowing up the droid base. Like, it's just so stupid.
Yeah, but their attack on the droid ship was really no better done than the attack on the large hexagon on the Death Planet.
Yeah.
It was just as unclear what their goal was.
Yeah, that's one thing in Force Awakens. Like, a lot of, like, the actual ship battles, they really weren't that good.
Well, the thing that was, you know, excellent about A New Hope is that they put the ships into a trench. Because, like, when you're in space, you can fly in any direction you want.
Yeah.
And there's really no relation between objects. So you have this large object that's a sphere, but it has a line on it. And if you get the ships into that line, you have a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah.
So that you have a point of reference for the action. I think it's part of the reason why there's very few actual space battles in Star Wars is because you get no sense of speed or scale.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, if you think about Force Awakens, there's hardly any space. Most of the spaceships fly through atmosphere through the whole movie.
Yeah, it's pretty much the only time they're in space is like when the TIE fighter, like when they escape and it down to Jakku. That's about the only
Which
time
Which is a very short sequence.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it worked really well. It's like, here's a Death Star. We have to go down this trench to get under the radar or whatever, get under the guns, and then we have to shoot this thing at the end of the trench.
Yeah.
It was a very linear goal.
Yeah.
And then you could show someone do it, fail, then show someone else do it, so when they succeed, you know what the difference is between success and failure.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't really have that in Force Awakens. It's, let's shoot this large building.
Yeah, it's just kind of a mess at the end, but...
Yeah, the end really lost me. And even after they do it, there's no energy. They get back to the base and... Then Chewie walks past Leia.
Yeah, and then it just ends, basically. It's like, oh, look, the two droids, like, the one decided to wake up. Now we can put the maps together. And then, like, Luke's just standing around on an island.
What did he eat on that island?
I don't know. It didn't look like there was a whole lot of, like, vegetation or
maybe
animals.
He's the last Jedi because he ate the other Jedi. So back to Phantom Menace. So something I thought was better about Phantom Menace was it had aliens in it.
Yeah.
There were hardly any creatures in Force Awakens.
Yeah, you basically have what, the dude at the beginning that, like, she takes the scavenged materials
Which I
to.
Think is, like, Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
Versus cameo. And then you've got Maz Kantana, who is Orange Yoda.
But yeah, other than that, it's like, yeah, you have your random cantina scene where it's like, oh, look, here we've got a bunch of, like, creatures.
But they're not characters.
The extent of it, yeah.
So Phantom Menace gets a lot of slack because you have the Trade Federation, which are Chinese caricatures. Watto is a Jewish caricature. Jar Jar Binks is a black caricature. But you know what? it made them distinct.
They were characters.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I actually really liked Watto watching Phantom Menace again.
Yeah, he's so good. Like, the writing's actually really good.
Yeah.
In the scenes.
The character animation is really good, except for the fact that he doesn't...
his little wings.
Yeah, his little wings would probably not support his weight unless they flapped a lot faster, in which case he'd be spending the whole movie eating. I can't let you go, Anakin. I have to eat this. See, you can do an impersonation of Watto. You can't do an impersonation of anyone in Force Awakens.
Yeah.
It gave the characters identity, even if they were very broad strokes, like Chinese Federation in space.
Yeah.
But you at least remember it.
Yeah, and I read something online where somebody talked about that, and well, except Maz talks in English, but they said, you know, like, the aliens don't talk in English as much in the new movie. Whereas, like, in the prequels, like, they all, not all of them, but a lot of them spoke English.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of, like, they could have had the Trade Federation guys speak in whatever language and then had subtitles.
Well, that one gang on Han's ship, they spoke in a subtitle language.
That's the thing, like, Phantom Menace, like, the stuff like that where people, like, you know, lambasted Lucas for it, it's like, I never really had a problem with it, because it was like... Like you said, you know, you could remember those characters. You know, like, you speak like the Federation guys. It's like, they must be dead by now. You know,
like, I mean, so what? They sound like a stereotypical, you know, Chinese voice, but it's not necessarily racist. It's just they sound like that. I mean, you could maybe say that with Jar Jar Binks,
but he is
pretty dumb. I know you love Jar Jar. of course, all of the Gungans talk really dumb, like Goonga Boomba Bamba.
Oh, Boss Nass, yeah.
Boss Nass, who looks nothing like the rest of the Gungans. Is that because he's really old?
There's this other podcast that's pretty good. It's called Fighting in the War Room. It's like a movie review type one, and I listened to them like talking about, they had like stuff leading up to Force Awakens, and so they were talking about like Phantom Menace. And apparently, like, one of the guys is like uber into like all the books and all this shit. Apparently, like, Boss Nass is what Gungans look like as they get older. So what he was saying is essentially as Jar Jar would get older, like, his ears would go away and he would start to look more like Boss Nass, which seems really weird. But
I think the biggest missed opportunity with Jar Jar is he never redeemed himself.
Yes.
It's like, I think we've talked about this a million times, but Jar Jar probably should have died in episode 3, saving the kids or trying to save the younglings from Anakin.
Yep. Because think how great that scene would have been. Like, and you got to wonder, maybe Lucas would have even done that, except that people hated Jar Jar so much that he would have hated the fact that people would have, like, cheered when that happened.
Yeah.
Because the thing that would have been great about that scene is that, yeah, Jar Jar would have redeemed himself trying to save these kids.
After creating the Empire.
Yeah, but then he also, like, Anakin would have been striking down, like, his friend. Because, like, they were friends. And, like, in Attack of the Clones, like, who does Anakin confide in about the fact that he likes Padme? He confides in Jar Jar. You know, it's like, so it would have had, like, extra weight if they had let Jar Jar develop maybe a bit more in Attack of the Clones instead of just showing up and, like, handing the keys over to Palpatine.
Yeah, and then Sith, where he's at Padme's funeral and that's it. Didn't have any lines.
Yeah, and it's like...
It's like they should have stuck with it.
Yeah.
I mean, he does... He's a lot more reserved and normal in Clones.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah. I also... Well, I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I also kind of wish Obi-Wan would have been responsible for Padme's death.
Yes, it would have worked much better. It would have explained the hatred. You wouldn't have had the bullshit, like, losing the will to live crap or whatever happened. Because it just makes sense. It's like, you know, you could have some situation where, like, either Obi-Wan was responsible for her death or, like, just Anakin somehow, like, loses his shit because he thinks that Padme wants to be with Obi-Wan or whatever, you know. But yeah, it would have been more interesting if, like, some perception from Anakin's point of view would have been, like, the cause of Padme's death by Obi-Wan or something. But
okay, A Phantom Menace definitely had a better score than The Force Awakens.
Oh, yes.
There was nothing memorable about the music in the new movie. And I almost think the movie was, like, too busy and moved too quickly to even give the score time to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, the movie doesn't really breathe, like, once it leaves Jakku, so...
Yeah. It speeds up, but it slows down.
Yeah.
Like in Phantom Menace, where the pilot's take off in the ships to go fight the droid ship, and one ship gets hit by artillery.
Yeah.
And then you just see it go, rim, 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 spires out of control and like falls like a mile down, yeah, and like, way boom. Down. It's like you, but you get a little bit of a time, a little bit of a moment to see things like that. Mm-hmm. There's other stuff too, like when the droid army comes over the Windows XP hill to fight the Gungans.
Yep.
And but then you hear like dun 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 dun. It's like the music is setting up the story, and it actually had a little bit of time to breathe.
Yeah, and they have that little pause there too, you know, where like the shields have been set up, and then there's like that first firing of the blaster into the shield, you know, so you can see like, oh, that's what it does. Yeah. It's going to protect them. And
I also think the ending of Phantom Menace in general was better than the ending of The Force Awakens.
Oh, yeah, like the Duel of the Fates. Because
like you had four things going on.
Yep.
Yeah, you had them fighting Red Face, Padme trying to get the Viceroy, then the Gungans fighting the droids, and then Anakin and the people fighting the droid ship.
Mm-hmm.
And all that was edited together really well. And then there was a low point to each one of those sections. Like Padme gets captured, the Gungans get defeated.
Yep. Qui-Gon dies.
Qui-Gon dies, and then Anakin's ships break down. Those are all edited to happen at the same point. Mm-hmm. And then every situation picks up at the same point, and then they all climax at the same point. And the Duel of the Fates music was awesome.
Oh, it's so good, yeah.
I mean, the sword fight is a little too choreographed, but it's still really well done and exciting, and you can see everything. Like, when Obi-Wan gets knocked down to the lower level, they have a wide shot. Okay, Obi-Wan's down here. Qui-Gon's up here. This is the distance.
Yeah.
Then, of course, you have that stupid Frogger machine with the red force fields. That's kind of a dumb plot device.
Yeah, it's just there to separate them. That's the only reason it exists.
But, yeah.
Which, it's like, could have come up with something better. I mean, it's like he separated them when Obi-Wan's down below. You know, it's like, yeah, that is a cool shot. Because it's like, yeah, like Qui-Gon and Maul are in the upper right-hand corner, like, fighting still. And then he's, like, dangling way down in the lower left. And
it is really awesome, even though the character is pointless. Like, I actually think Darth Maul is worse than Jar Jar Binks. He has no point
he does
in the story.
Nothing.
He's just a bad guy with a sword.
Yeah.
And obviously, Force Awakens did a lot better with Kylo Ren. He's a much better villain. I actually thought I liked him quite a bit. A lot of people had problems with him, but I thought he was cool.
Yeah, he was pretty well set up. It's just kind of like, I'm interested to see where they take him, I guess.
Well, I guess he needs a mask now that he has a big slash on his face.
Yeah. But
he needs his Ford Focus grill mask. In Phantom Menace, when the door slides open and Darth Maul's there, it's like, "Hola, Shepo, Lata." It's like, oh, yes. It's going to kick into gear.
Like, yeah, and I love that, too. Like, Padme has that line where she's just like, "We'll take the long way." And they, like, go off some other direction.
Now we will discuss a new treaty. Our peaceful kingdom keeps guns in the throne. So I would say aliens I like better. Music I like better.
Better lightsaber battle than what was in Force Awakens, I would say.
Well, the Force Awakens battles felt more real because it was like amateurs fighting amateurs, but it was still unbelievable that either Finn or Rey would even stand a remote chance against that guy.
The coolest thing about that fight is the setting, because it's like snowing and it's like,
oh yeah,
and they're outside. You know, they're not like in some building fighting, like what is almost always the case in every other lightsaber battle.
Yes.
So that was cool.
How about you? Can you think of anything?
I mean, a lot of that's pretty much the same thing. Like, yeah, like Watto is like such a great character. It's one of those things where you kind of wish there was more of him, but. And it's fun when you see him pop up in Attack of the Clones when they go to find his mom.
Yeah, and he's all disheveled.
Yeah, because you could see, like, basically, like, Qui-Gon wipes him out on that pod race, and it's, like, apparent he, like, never really recovered from that. He's got, like, a pit droid thing on his head for, like, a hat or something.
He's got a hat now.
And, yeah, I like that stuff. I mean, of course, I like Jar Jar. I really don't see I don't know what it is. Like, I watch that movie, and, like, he's around, and he just brings a smile to my face. Like, maybe it's just because he is so absurd that he makes me laugh. But,
I mean, do you think if Jar Jar would have not talked so stupidly, if people would have accepted him better?
Probably.
I mean, he does a lot of dumb stuff as well, but
I don't know.
It's like, they could have dialed a few things, a few attributes, and maybe made him a much better character, a much more liked character.
Yeah, because... That's the thing. There's like a thin line between those things.
I would still love to see Jar Jar come back. I mean, we talked about Force Awakens. How awesome it would have been if Luke turned around and it was Jar Jar! Oh my God!
It would have been so great.
I wonder if someone on YouTube has done that yet. Like, you know, like Photoshop that. That would be so wonderful.
We'll have to wait till like a decent quality video of the movie available, and somebody has to do that. Because it would have been so great. And that's the thing. Like, you know, we say that like jokingly, but it's like I honestly believe, like, in the right hands, like Jar Jar could be redeemed as a character that people could begrudgingly like.
Yeah.
Because it's like to me, he's a really interesting character because, you know, think about him at this point. Like, if he is still alive, how would he have kind of coped with this? Because he would have to live with the fact that he essentially, like...
gave the Emperor power.
Yeah.
Like he said, if I'm pros, I'm Supreme Chancellor or whatever.
Yeah, you know, but it's like, you know, think about that. It's like now he's, like, older. Maybe he's had to live with that guilt.
He should have, like, ripped up ears and be, like, really gaunt.
Yeah, and he's, like, you know, kind of tried to come to... Like, he might have went into isolation. You know,
yeah,
who
he should have turned into, like, a Charles Bronson or a Scott Glenn-type character.
Yeah.
But as a Gungan.
Yeah, and it's like, I think something really interesting could be done with him.
It will never happen.
But it'll probably never happen, because Disney's a bunch of pussies. That was the thing, yeah, like, Han died. I have to think Harrison Ford was like, okay, you're going to give me $20 million, and I'm going to die in this movie. That's the only way Han Solo was coming back.
Yeah, because he was supposed to die in Return of the Jedi.
Because I can't imagine Disney would have went into that movie just willingly killing him, unless it was mandated. Because look at the Marvel movies. They can't kill shit in those things.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem that I have with those, is there's no finality to anything.
Yeah, it's like, oh, because like in Winter Soldier, you know, it was like cool when it's like, oh, it looks like Nick Fury died. And then when he shows up, that like just deflated that whole
movie.
Well,
it looks like War Machine gets killed in Captain America. Probably not, though. Yeah, it just goes into a coma or something.
They put it right in the goddamn trailer. There's no way he's really dead, you know?
I could see Tony Stark getting killed at some point. Just because he's too expensive.
Yeah.
Not because it really makes sense for the story.
Yeah, and they don't want to try to recast him, probably, so.
Yeah, until they do.
Yeah.
Until they reboot the Marvel Universe.
Oh, God.
I don't know. I think comic book movies will tip over before we'll actually get that far.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was a nice thing in this when, you know, Han died, because it was just kind of like... You know, you could feel it coming, but still, even when it happened, you were like, holy shit, they did it.
Yeah.
You know, and that was nice.
I don't have a problem with predictability in movies if it's something that I want to have happen.
Yeah.
Well, I wish Rocky would have died in Creed.
Yeah.
I mean, he probably will in the Creed sequel, but I think he should have died in this one. Just get it over with.
Would have guaranteed him an Oscar if he had.
Oh, yeah.
Where now he's got to, like, fight it out.
Jones, what do you hope for the future of the Star Wars movies, since we're going to get one every year now for at least the next 5 years?
And I think I even said this before. I know I said it to people. I don't know if I said it on the podcast, but even before Force Awakens, I've been more excited about Rogue One and Episode 8 than I was for this, because I expected this to be safe, not this safe. But like Rogue One, I think Rogue One could be really cool, because it should be kind of its own standalone thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to tell a story that, in theory, should be interesting. It's like they're going to show us how they stole the Death Star plans.
And we don't know who survives or, you know, dies. So it could, if they set up characters that we like, and they set up the mission as being really, you know, dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be drama because we don't know who's going to live or die.
Yep. And the thing that could be cool with that movie is if they do it like a heist movie, which is what it should be.
Yeah.
Well,
Ant-Man was basically a heist movie.
Yeah, because I mean, that's what's kind of fun with Marvel is, you know, they can kind of, you know, they're all comic book
change
movies,
the genre,
but they can go into
every
different
film.
Genres, you know. And so I'm hoping that's kind of what happens with these. Like, I know it won't with, like, the big, you know, core movies, but hopefully with, like, these anthology ones or whatever.
Yeah, the core movies
are
called the Skywalker Saga, because apparently there's nothing else important in the universe.
Yeah.
And then anthology films are the ones that happen every year in between.
Yeah, so I'm hoping, like, with those that they'll kind of... Maybe those will be the ones they'll take a few more risks with.
I hope so. I mean, sure, they'll be lower budget.
But, like, with Episode 8, you know, I'm really hopeful for them... Wow, that was some thunder. But I'm really hopeful that they give, like, Rian Johnson some slack. Like, because if the guy that, like, wrote and directed Looper brings his A-game to a Star Wars movie... and isn't, like, shackled, that could be pretty badass. So,
you know who I think should direct a Star Wars movie?
Spielberg?
Matthew Vaughn.
Well, yeah, that's who we hoped would actually direct episode 7.
Oh, man, he could have made such a fantastic movie.
But it's like, yeah, he did First Class really well.
Stardust.
Up this new world, Stardust. He did Kick-Ass was good.
Oh, God. Yeah. But no, we get Colin Trevorrow.
Ugh. Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed Jurassic World, but it's like...
I didn't.
He would not be my choice to go off and direct a Star Wars movie.
Actually, I think Matthew Vaughn should direct every movie.
That would be
somehow.
Cool.
We need a clone army of Matthew Vaughns. Misa, authorize a clone army!
Because that's the thing, Rian Johnson, I guess he's writing 8 and 9, but he's only directing 8.
This is something I would like to say, but I think J.J. Abrams is a fantastic director. He's a better director than he is a writer. I would love to see him make a movie that he didn't write.
Yeah, he should just do, like, Spielberg's basically his hero. It's like, be Spielberg. Spielberg's written, like, 2 or 3 movies ever.
Close Encounters and...
AI, he wrote. Which are both really good movies, but it's like...
But usually he doesn't write
the movie. He knew his limits. He's like, these are stories that I feel like I can write and tell, but then everything else, he goes off and tells a story that somebody else has crafted. And, yeah, I think Abrams would... do well to follow that approach.
Yeah, I would really like to see a J.J. Abrams movie written by someone else. As awful as that sounds.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, he's definitely got great directorial skills. It's just, yeah, he kind of gets lost in the
detail. How about a Josh Whedon script directed by J.J. Abrams?
That'd be all right, because, yeah, I think Joss Whedon's incredibly overrated as far as like his directing, which I know geeks will hate that, but I just don't get it with him. Like,
the directing? He's a better writer than a director.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, he does a perfectly adequate job directing, but yeah. I mean, I don't think either Avenger movie is really anything that special.
No.
And people like Serenity or Firefly because of the characters, which again is derived from the writing, not how it was actually put together.
Yeah, Avengers was very much like I enjoyed it when I saw it the first time, and then on subsequent attempts, it's been really hard to get through.
Yeah, I would agree. It is nowhere near my favorite Marvel movie.
And Ultron,
which might
just
be Iron Man 3.
Wow. Mine would have been Winter Soldier up until fucking Sam Jackson showed up alive. That really put a dent in that movie. So it might be like Thor 2, actually.
I haven't seen that one.
I really like that one.
Thor 2, huh?
Somebody actually dies in that movie, for one thing. But then there's like this really cool dynamic with Loki and Thor. They kind of have to like buddy up in it. And it creates like a really good dynamic. I really enjoyed that movie. I know it seems like that's one that people shit on a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I liked Ant-Man up until it became Iron Man. At the end. Ha ha! So you don't want the company that you started to build weapons? Well, I'm going to put on the weapon and beat you in the face until you die. Then I can sell the weapons.
I'm just not Jeff Bridges this time.
I'm the drunken senator from House of Cards.
Yes. The only thing I'd say with
Ant-Man... You made the best weapon ever, and now I'm going to kill you with it.
The thing I'd say with Ant-Man is that at least... sets that up better than Iron Man did, because I don't know. Iron Man is just like, oh, I'm your buddy, I'm your father
Jeff Bridges,
figure,
it's
and
better
then,
automatically.
And then, oh, I'm evil now. You know,
He was kind of no.
I mean, he was.
They portray him as being evil pretty quickly. Remember, he goes over to wherever and like gets the armor pieces from the bad guys and then kills them.
Yeah,
that's like maybe halfway through the movie.
But I don't know. It just.
I'm sorry, Jeff Bridges on his worst day is better than bald, drunken senator from House of Cards.
Well, I'd agree. I'm just saying the character.
If you go up on IMDb, that's his name.
Although I think he's the best part of House of Cards. Like, his character's really interesting.
Spoiler warning, he dies.
Surprise. That's why you only need to watch season 1 of that show.
Yeah, I mean, what's going to happen next? Is he going to become, like, president of space?
It's just like there's such leaps of faith in that show. Like the first season, it's like, okay, I can kind of buy this. And then like season 2, it's just like the last couple of episodes, it's just like these like seismic shifts happen. You know, it's just like, seriously? And then like season 3, it's just kind of like, well, I guess this is happening now. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
The first season's really damn good, but it's just kind of goes off the rails after that.
Yeah, because the first season he becomes like the Speaker of the House, then he becomes a Vice President, then he becomes the President.
Yeah.
Oh, but doesn't like Robin, no, Robin Penn, no, Wright?
Yeah.
she's going to divorce him or something?
What's that?
No, it's not. She's Robin Penn again. No, wait, Robin Wright.
Yeah, because that's her maiden name.
Sorry, I got confused. Princess Bride decides that she's going to divorce Buttercup. President Usual Suspects. And the only one that can stop her is crappy Invisible Woman.
Yeah, Kaiser Soze and Buttercup. Lord over the United States.
Oh, God.
And yeah, like... Yeah, Shitty Invisible Woman.
I still haven't seen that. I don't think that's even like good bad movie night material.
Yeah, it's not like Terminator Genesis material.
Terminator
Genesis.
You
didn't see that, right?
I did. Oh, I was super. I was just like, that was my battleship this year. It's like, I cannot wait to see this hunk of shit.
It was better than it had any right to be. I mean, it's certainly not a good movie, but it entertained me.
I've seen other movies that I would say were better than they had any right to be that were a lot better than Genesis. Like Scorpion King is an excellent example.
Yes.
Here's the thing. Why doesn't Chuck Russell direct more movies?
No shit.
Like, they're talking about making a live-action Aladdin. Finally? Yeah. Of all the freaking live-action adaptations Disney's making, that sounds awesome.
Yes.
It's like, live-action Aladdin, PG-13, have Chuck Russell direct it.
Yeah, because
I would go to that.
Because who gives a shit about Jungle Book, really?
John Favreau?
Well, yeah, I guess.
They must have spent an ass load of money making that Jungle Book movie. It's all CG, everything. I mean, it looks amazing, but...
Yeah, it looked stupid good.
It's like, let's spend $80 million on a CGI bear, because that's cheaper than getting a real bear. And I guess Scarlett Johansson is a sexy snake.
I guess.
And Alec Baldwin is Chinese!
And then the ape from Planet of the Apes is in it. Like, he looks exactly like the one, I can't remember what.
Big ape from the first movie?
Yeah, I mean, he looks exactly like they just called up Fox and were like, hey, we just
Sure that's a type of species of ape.
Probably, but I mean, he looks just like identical. It's like they just lifted the same one.
Well, yeah, I mean, because it's based off real animals.
I know, but they could have like changed
like giant snakes. Those are real animals,
obviously.
Hey, that reminds me. Speaking of
sexy,
since you brought it up, plant sexy snake. Since you brought it up. The new Planet of the Apes movies
are awesome.
They're really good, and that is the kind of story Terminator Genesis should have told.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
really, a Terminator sequel should have started immediately after Terminator 3. Again, it didn't because a lot of people didn't like Terminator 3. They're wrong.
They're wrong. Yes.
But in Planet of the Apes, it shows. It was like we're familiar with this post-apocalyptic ape future, you know, where the apes like have society and guns and whatever. But it's like, okay, how do we get to that? And the Planet of the Apes, the new movies, are showing exactly how that happens. It's actual science fiction.
Yes.
It's like, here's how we're transitioning from one state to another state. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Terminator sequels, everything since Terminator 3 has jumped ahead like 10 years.
Yeah, they jump all the most interesting stuff, basically.
I want to see how these prototype robots evolve. Like, do they build better versions of themselves? How do they organize? How do they connect? How does the human resistance connect? I want to see humans being thrown into the vats. And or like, what was it? Terminator? Oh, I did notice that in Terminator Genesis. He's got the barcode on his arm, and then the robot scans it the wrong way.
Oh,
so if you have a vertical barcode, you have to scan it like this.
Yeah, I didn't.
You don't
notice
scan
that.
It like this. Mm. So that just, I'm like, that's the wrong way.
It's like, God damn it.
Anyway, it would have been really nice to see that. Terminator 4 should have started with Nick Stahl and Claire Danes
standing
still in the bunker, and what do they do next?
Yep, because, they set that up so well because they start getting the communications from the other humans that are still alive, and then it's like,
who's in charge there?
I
am, John
next.
Connor.
Yeah. You know, it would have been so good.
I wish more people would have liked Terminator 3 because it had a super ballsy ending.
Yes.
And it set up... I've said this a million times, but they could have perfectly done a post-apocalyptic future war trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Like what happens after Terminator 3, then in part... What would that be? Part 5.
Yeah.
You could meet... maybe part 4 is... how the robots evolve and like the humans band together. Part five, the robots start killing off their mating humans, like the war begins. And then John Connor could kind of, quote unquote, adopt like a kid. It could be Kyle Reese. You could have an inverse of the father-son relationship. Then in part six, he sends Kyle Reese back in time, which granted we saw in Genesis, but that's the end, and it would complete the circle perfectly.
Yep.
Instead of all this like retcon garbage and that we had in Terminator Genisys.
Yeah.
But now those movies can never happen.
Nope.
And you do not need Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No.
It's meant to be. The T-800 is an infiltration machine. Why would they all look like the same person? They don't. In Terminator 1, another random bodybuilder comes into the base and starts shooting everybody. But it's a different bodybuilder. Or even in Terminator 3, again, vastly underrated movie. He's like, I was selected because of John Connor's
attachment
to my model.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, there is a reason that he was sent in, and it was explained.
Yeah. Yep.
It's like, I was able to get close enough to him to kill him because he remembers me from his youth.
Yeah. And again, look how easy it is. It's like a single sentence. It's all you need, you know, and you can, like, make all these criticisms go away.
Yeah.
It's really that easy. But, so isn't it like, doesn't Cameron get the rights back in like 2019?
Yes, they were going to try to squeeze out three movies before then, with the last one coming out in 2019.
I'm
pretty sure they're not going to.
So do you think Cameron would ever go back and make another?
Isn't he going to be making Avatar sequels until like the end of time?
Yeah, he's like shitting out like three of them apparently. I can't see him going back.
I don't think he cares.
Yeah, I wouldn't think he would.
Really? I mean, it should just be left. If they can't make Ben Heckendorn's wonderful idea for Terminators 4 through 6, then they shouldn't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
They should just, come up with a new idea.
Oh, no, we can't do that.
You know what we need to do is we need to go, well, not us, but they need to go back and remake more obscure movies, like The Thing and The Fly. I mean, those are usually considered like be the two best remakes, and they're both remade off of fairly obscure older movies and done better. But nowadays, they only remake really popular movies. It's like, how are you going to improve Ghostbusters? You won't. It really can't be done. And I don't know. I mean, maybe Hardware, which is this weird low-budget robot movie from like 1990, maybe they could remake that. Maybe they could remake The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah.
Like, because that obviously didn't work.
Well, yeah, that's like I read something a month ago where some schmucks got a hold of the rights to Memento. So they're like, oh, we're going to remake Memento. It's just like Ghostbusters. It's like, you will not do it better. You will not.
actually, Short Circuit, if done in an interesting way, could be an interesting story.
Yeah.
They don't need to remake it, but they are going to because it's a movie people have heard of.
Somebody at work was saying they really want a Hackers sequel for some reason, so they can remake Hackers.
Angelina Jolie.
But I'm like, almost every spy movie these days has some sort of supposed hacking in it. You know, it's kind of like ubiquitous in those sorts of movies anymore. So it's like, would you really like base a whole movie around it? They kind of did with Swordfish. You know, Hugh Jackman gets blown while he's hacking something.
I have never seen that movie.
Oh well, that happens in it. That's like their test for Hugh Jackman, like these guys that want to hire him or some shit to like hack.
Oh, don't they have someone do that to him while he's trying to hack?
Yes, and he has to do it in some time frame, and so that's like their test.
That's interesting.
So, and then John Travolta's in it for some reason, so it's kind of a batshit movie. I don't remember it being terrible.
Why don't they make a sequel to Fifth Element? The movie everyone loves for some reason.
That would be awesome.
You know what they should call it?
The Sixth Element. Remember way back before the prequels happened? Or actually maybe I wasn't talking to you at the time. I don't think we were
at the time. Luc Besson should have directed a Star Wars movie.
Well, like I remember we talked about at some point, I don't know if it was me and Dale or me, you and Dale, whatever, but it was like we were talking about like our fantasy for the three movies because we knew there'd be three movies. And so it's like, okay, the first movie, Spielberg should direct that one. Then the second movie, it's like, that's going to be the love story. That should be Cameron.
Oh, yeah.
And then the third movie was going to be like when all hell breaks loose. And it's like, that should be Luc Besson. Because, of course, just after The Fifth Element. And
But Spielberg was supposed to direct Return of the Jedi, but he couldn't because Lucasfilm was non-union.
Yeah. Well, and I've read stuff, too, where apparently, like, Lucas... And I remember this back when, like, Phantom Menace came out. Like, he only... He didn't really want to direct any of them. But then at first he was like, well, okay, I'll do Phantom Menace. And he actually wanted, like, Spielberg and... Who else was... There was somebody else. Like, he wanted them to direct at least a couple of the prequels. But both of these other directors, like Spielberg and whoever the other one was, both told him, it's like, George, this is your story. You should be the one to tell it. And it's like... So
that
he
was probably
actually,
a mistake.
Yeah, so he actually... Yeah, he didn't want to direct them. And that's what kind of sucks. It's kind of like Crystal Skull in a way. It's like it was almost like they were obligated to make these movies.
Yeah, if you watch behind the scenes of that, Steven Spielberg clearly has no interest in it.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's hilarious for Crystal Skull.
Interdimensional beings? Fine.
You could just tell. It's like after like whatever it was, 18, 19 years of people being like, when's the next Indiana Jones come out? It's like Spielberg was finally just like, okay, fine, fuck it. I will make one. You didn't say it had to be good. I'm just going to shit something out.
Really? They should have just kept it at three. I mean, even like in the 90s when they were trying to get like a fourth one going with Kevin Costner as his brother. It's like,
oh, I forgot about yep. that. Yeah.
And it's like, we don't know. It's done. Maybe one more final comment on Star Wars before we cut off this
yes.
extraneous podcast. So what was that? That What's Up app was like a $5 billion for an app.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah. Yep.
The company that made one app that no one will care about in a year
cost
$5 billion, whereas Disney got Lucasfilm for like, what, $3.8
yeah,
billion?
Yeah.
Pretty good deal.
Yeah, I think they've probably... They got to be getting close to being in the black already, I would think, because just of all the merchandising and all that, and then...
Where the real money of the movie is made.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point, because, yeah, you look at it, and it's like, yeah, like, that was $5 billion or whatever. It's like Skype. What the hell did Microsoft pay for Skype?
Billions
like
of dollars.
$10 billion or something crazy, you know? It's like, yeah, it's... You think about that, and it's like, yeah, freaking... Lucasfilm was a bargain.
Well, that should be enough for this secondary podcast. And we were talking, we should definitely try to maybe at least do these once a month.
Yes.
Just like the olden days. So let us know what topics you'd like us to talk about, or if you're just going to stop listening altogether because we said that some things in The Phantom Menace were done better than The Force Awakens.
Because it's true. Rewatch them with an open mind.
Open your mind, Mr. Quaid.
It's like, yes, they have problems, but they also have their merits, so...
Open your mind, Quaid. Start the reactor. Free Mars. No wonder he stayed undercover.